Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Studio with me today, Julian Joiello.
Hey there.
Hey, cuz.
Glad to be here.
Yes, we've been doing some work on the idea of how you live. Now, look. We're going to be taking calls real early today because we're going to be soon coming up to the fun drive. And when we get to the fun drive, there are no telephone calls, which will be next month. So if you want to at any point relate to whatever we're talking about, the telephone number here is 212-957-2729. It's 212-957-2729. Let's talk about living. Let's talk about the fact that you could either live on the inside or you could live on the outside. For some people, all of their life is determined by sensations on the inside that they attribute to the outside. For example, if you're anxious, if you're excited, if you're nervous, and if you're that kind of person walking around, you're always looking for something to distract you. So your mind will attach to anything that it sees. And if it sees something that a fast car, or it sees something that's an accident, or it sees something that's a negative, or it sees something that it wants to eat up, chew up, spit out, it goes towards it because you have all this excess energy inside of you. The real identification of a human is to figure out, what do I feel on the inside? Am I over-energized, or the opposite of that, am I under-energized? If you're depressed, if you're feeling sick, if you're feeling weak, fatigue, you're always looking for a spark to wake you up. So somebody flirting with you on a train suddenly has a whole different meaning. You could fall in love with somebody who smiles at you. So if your mood is down, you look for up on the outside. If your mood is up and too far up, you look for down on the outside. So, for example, if you're feeling hyper-excited, you might focus on depressing things. You know, what am I doing? I'm feeling very nervous. I think I'll call my old girlfriend. Right? Good enough. That's one way to get yourself back down on the ground. Or, what am I doing? I'm feeling depressed. I'll do something dangerous. I'll make some strange phone calls. I'll find some way of changing my chemistry. Now, the trouble with this is you believe that it is the outside that is determining the way you feel on the inside. And it's not. It's the inside that's determining how you feel on the outside. And it sets up a loop. So let's say you're feeling weak and fatigued and sick. And now you're kind of just give me some energy. So you go and you call up a friend. And now your friend is giving you energy, but they give you negative energy. Then you get into an argument back and forth. You still blame the outside incident for the way you feel on the inside. Step one, learn to identify what you feel on the inside. There's a third way, which is go numb. So if it's not that you're very anxious, but not that you're depressed, but you just go dead.
So what happens when you're like a nervous type of person and you live in New York City and you walk outside and everything's nervous, and does it kind of like spiral out of control, or does it cancel each other out?
If you go outside in New York City and you're of adolescent energy, so now your body plus has to have the ability. You can be 90 years old and go outside, and then the world is invasive. But if you could match the energy, you can match the rhythm, it doesn't cancel itself out. It just goes nowhere. It's like being on a train. So it doesn't necessarily.
Right. So then what about the people that don't go outside? I was in Asia, as everybody I think knows, we've been talking about a lot. I was there for about a month, and I found something really interesting. There's this kind of phenomenon that came about in the last 20 years with the male population that's like in their 20s. And in Japan specifically, it's called hikikomori, which is like a social isolation. These guys who stay inside, all the time for 6 months, 12 months, years, and they just kind of go outside to buy cheese balls and Mountain Dew and then come back home, go on the internet, scroll through articles, and kind of never leave their home. And what's amazing is that there's over a million just in Japan. A million of these guys who never leave their house. And it's really interesting talking about these people who go outside and you feel everything all the time and everything affects them. What about these people?
Right. So they're closed in, right? Their only safe place is in their cave.
Right.
And they stay in that cave. Imagine 21 to 28 years old, living and never seeing anybody, never going out except really, really late at night. Now, they may be with or without family,
right,
according to what I've understood.
Yeah, well, I was reading a couple articles about it, and there's one by Caitlin Stainbrook online that I read from this year. And she was saying that basically these people only have familial ties, if any, at all. They don't have anything outside of the family or what's in their house next to them in the next room, maybe. It's just them, their computer, their television. Entertainment media kind of feeds their entire life. So this kind of started with the proliferation of entertainment in the modern world, which is why it's such a phenomenon, because these millions of people just, we don't even know, because they're just not, they're not outside to see. They're in their homes and kind of hidden.
It's kind of fascinating. I was just speaking to Sonal, a friend who said she just got back from India, a month in India. She said in India, there is no soundproofing, right?
Okay.
She said it's just nothing. It's noisiest as you could possibly imagine. She said mm-hmm. everything comes through the walls. She said she and her mother tried to sit down and watch a TV program. Between the birds and their sounds and the humans and the traffic and everything else, there is no such thing as being able to sit and watch a TV, much less a computer. See, much less could they isolate themselves. So if you think of the differences, there's one world that provides you with the chance you could be private. You could close off. And there's another world that says you can't do it, because here in India, we're going to just keep you in the world. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. We will start taking calls in just a minute.
Yeah, I also heard about on the opposite side of that, there's a place in, I think, Michigan, and it's the quietest place in the world. And it's soundproofed like to the 99.9th percentile. And you go in there, and the only thing you can hear is your organs. And so people sit there, and they sit there, and they hear their heart and their lungs breathing and their liver moving around like things that they've eaten and like their finger bones cracking. And it's like, apparently you can't spend more than 45 minutes inside it because you start going insane. And it's just so interesting on both sides of that spectrum. There's the noisiness and there's the total silence, the lack of noise.
Well, you see, you just showed me a response, the under 30 response to hearing about your internal organs, right? It's people sitting around a swimming pool, right? Elderly people, they talk about, oh, my liver this, my heart this, my God. And people who come by who are younger people who visit who say, why are you talking about your insides? That's private. That's don't talk about your insides. It's disgusting. Whereas on the same level, that's all they want to do to communicate with each other. Right? This is the way I talk to you. I talk to you about my insides. I don't talk about my outsides because I'm more familiar with them because they make more noise. They're more of a family. Well, anyway, we're talking about externalizing your life. And we're talking about what you do to try to see who you are. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. Let's say hello to Jade. Hi, Jade. You're on the air. It's Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand.
Hello,
calling
Jade.
Because, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you beautifully.
Thank you. I'm on the show. That's why I had. So I've been listening to the program, and I've been doing some research on anxiety because I've been diagnosed with anxiety, more specifically PTSD. And my question is the way that anxiety related to PTSD the same as a generalized anxiety? Because I didn't have a fear of the world or going out or engaging until I had a traumatic event. So what do you do to get out of the loop?
Well, there are two approaches to getting out of PTSD. First of all, what was the traumatic event?
I was attacked in a public place.
Attacked in a public place. Mm-hmm. Could you be a little more descriptive?
Sure. A guy had been stalking me, and he attacked me in a public park.
Wow. Wow. And how terrible did it become? What happened? Did he get away? Did you get away? Did you wind up screaming? Were you hospitalized?
Well, I got away. My blood pressure, my breathing rate is going up. I got away.
Wait. What just went up?
I'm starting to feel like I'm hyperventilating.
Good. Now stop with me. Good. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to trigger that. Stay with me.
Okay.
No, wait. Stay with me. Come on. I'm going to help you out.
He had actually stalked me for almost a year.
Jade, mm-hmm. Stop for a moment, okay?
Okay.
Now, you could feel that hyperventilation happening right as you start to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Breathe only through your nose.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to take 10 breaths in and out through your nose only, not breathing through your mouth and not speaking. Do that now with me, okay?
Okay.
Slowly in and out through your nose. Just 8 more times. Now breathe in through your nose and out through your lips for the next 5. And the next time you exhale, I want you to exhale extra oxygen. Okay, now hold it right there. Did you feel that physical shift?
Oh, some, yes.
Okay, now this is the idea. What we need to do for you is to help you track that exactly what you were talking about when you felt the air take place, mm-hmm. and you felt yourself hyperventilating.
Mm-hmm.
That's where when you catch it and you do just this, but you don't stop yourself from what you want to say, but you just catch it like this. This is how the most effective way of dealing with the anxiety part of the post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm.
Another way people do it is they have you get involved in it and indulge all the way and go into the panic of it. That's another way.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two ways. The way you just did it now would be a significant help. So ask me a question about it now. What do you want to know about the PTSD?
Well, again, how do I get out of it? And my issue, my concern is that the situation has not resolved. I don't live with this person. It's a neighbor. So I see the person frequently.
Mm.
And before the person, kind of for years, I lived where I was, and I had never seen the person. And then the person popped up, and they were, like, always there wherever I went for almost a year until he attacked me. I moved, and first I moved out of the neighborhood, but I had to move back into my house. And so now he's appearing again. And, you know, the police just haven't been responsive. And so I'm fearful. I'm fearful wherever I go. I'm hypervigilant. I look around to see this person and what that person is doing, and other people in the community know, and I feel like I'm being re-victimized because people know that I have the anxiety, and I just feel like the situation is growing, that more people are kind of coming in and doing the same type of things that he's doing to get a response. So what do I do about that?
Hmm. Well, okay, I can't really tell because there's part of me that is trying to figure out how your imagination has taken you to a point where you produce as well as report what's accurate. Mm-hmm. So we all have that. You know, we have this bit of fear, and we have the fear, we feel it for a moment, and then we have attachments to it, and we externalize it, and we bring it further out. I can't tell over this phone what part of that is happening with you. That would be the kind of thing I would be able to see in person.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very difficult for me to be able to tell you from here because I can't tell you. See, I would imagine if I were attacked, I would imagine all kinds of attacks in the future. I would want to separate for myself which are real and which are not real.
Well, here's the thing, and people have suggested to me that that what I'm describing as attacks are my imagination. So I actually began to take pictures and video people, and so it's not my imagination. I have people on tape.
Yeah.
You know, engaged in, I mean, what I would classify as aggressive or assaultive behavior. And I, you know, and I've shown them to other people and without any background, and they agree with me. So some of it, yes, is my imagination, but there are parts of it that are not my imagination.
Okay, now let me ask you something, Jade. Is it okay if part of it is your imagination?
I mean, would I be okay with that?
Yes, yes, yes. Are you okay?
Yes.
Yes, good.
Yeah, I would be okay with that. If someone if someone could show me how this is your imagination, and if you give this up, you would get better, you would heal and go back to life as it was before the attack, that would
Jade,
be great. That's
Jade,
what I want.
I would be so happy for you if that were real possible. I don't know if it is. I'd have to meet you in this case, and it's rarely something that I would ever say to people. I would have to see myself. You know, I wish I could just tell you on the phone. I cannot tell.
Okay.
I cannot tell, but you do have my heart, and if you want me to beat him up, tell me.
Yes, come beat him up.
I'll go punch him in the nose. Get away from this lady. She's part of the family. Do you have anybody in your family who would do that?
Well, here's what happened, and which is, again, part of the trauma. My father would have done that for me, and I knew that. So when the person began to stalk me and harass me, I didn't call my dad. And after the person attacked me, I still didn't tell my father. My father overheard me updating my mother on what was happening. I didn't realize he could hear me, and he got really upset. And he suffered from hypertension. His blood pressure went up and never came down, and he died 2 months after the attack of a massive hemorrhagic stroke.
Oh my God, Jade.
So that was my, you know, he was my support person. You know, I like to talk to my dad, you know, every day. And for this situation, I specifically decided not to tell him because I did not want him to come and confront the person, because I think the person
is Jade,
just kind of a bad person. So
now you have a double thing attached to it. Look at this, as I suspected. So now you have your father's death associated to that thing. What a load that's carrying. This is the case where the breathing is not as important as the other that I was talking about, getting into these feelings. There's a lot to explore here. I don't know how deeply you've gone with this, but this is worthy of a couple of therapeutic sessions that would take you into it. You know, you're a brave person, but we hope to clean this out. We hope to clean this out.
Okay.
You know, email me if you want to, and I'll try to find a way to explore this even better, okay?
All right. Thank you.
My courage to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Courage is such a funny word, courage. I was asking Julian before. I said, Julian, can you remember a time, your last act of courage? And he said to me, he said, yes. And he told me about a thing where he was defending a friend of his. And I thought to myself, courage. Somehow, whenever we perceive ourselves as courageous, we perceive ourselves as having confronted something that we overcame. But almost inevitably, the thing that we've confronted has to do with our fathers or mothers. It's a funny thing. I was courageous when I stood up to that man who was yelling at me. Well, who was that man like? Well, he was just like my father. I was courageous when I left that woman, that girlfriend, my wife, when I got a divorce. What was she like? Well, she was like my mother. Courage always seems in some way to be related to somebody in the family more directly than the situation that seems to be presenting itself. Like standing up against a policeman, you know, and saying, hey, no, you don't. Well, if you're good in life with all authorities and you stand up to a policeman against injustice, fine. But if you're fighting all authorities, right, that's a different thing. 212-957-2729. So this is what we're talking about. Hikikomoris.
Yeah, hikikomori.
Hikikomori.
So, yeah, it's such an interesting phenomenon to me, because I feel like it's just so many people are involved. I mean, they call it Japan's missing million. And it's not, I mean, that's just in Japan. So we've got a million in Japan. I'm sure we've got several million in America. And it's like this term. I mean, I have a friend whose mom is like this, and she literally plays a game called Second Life on her computer, and she is lost in that. And she goes outside to buy Diet Coke and whatever snack is she's going to eat or whatever food she needs, and then is home indefinitely. I mean, and it's amazing to see, because they're so satisfied in that, and there's really no problem with it. And I wonder what social interaction exists other than just familial ties.
You know, it's kind of interesting, Julian. When we were kids, when we thought about living up in the clouds, you know, we thought about being an angel. What's it like to go to heaven and then you live in the clouds?
The daydreamers.
You play a harp and you live up there and it's all nice, and that's what the end of life is like. Nowadays, people are living in the clouds. The iCloud.
The iCloud.
You know, you're up there and you're in that world. That world where you could play games and do whatever you need to do,
right.
And you have a whole private world. It's like there's a whole group of people who have decided to migrate to the moon, and nobody knows they left.
It's like nothing changed for everyone else, but these people are there.
Are you an isolationist? Are you somebody who wants to be alone? Do you want to be alone? 212-957-2729. Is being alone the only way you could be safe? I met a man about 10 years ago. No, 5 years ago. He said to me the only thing he likes, believe it or not, are animals. He said he just doesn't trust humans. And so he spends his time with animals out in the forest, out in the trees, out in the, you know. And that's the only place he feels safe. Does not like humans. I spoke to him just recently, yesterday, in fact. He said he was remarking to me about how wonderful it was to sit with a friend, and that for the first time he's enjoying humans again. Would you like to be humanized, or have you dehumanized? A lot of people around the age of 40, 50 years old, they just start turning it off. They say, that's it. That's it. I'm on my own, just on my own. But, you know, it could also be the beginning of a whole new wonderful thing, which I imagine it will be. We've got Joyce on the line, 212-957-2729. Hello, Joyce. It's Armand DeMille.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi there.
I can relate very much to the subject this morning. I kind of tuned in late, but I heard a couple of discussions, and I'm definitely bipolar. And I know that covers a lot of different situations. In my case, I started out with a very tough early childhood infancy, in that I was abused by a couple of different families, foster families.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was adopted into a pretty stable household on the outside, but my mom had a lot of anger issues, so she was abusive. Dad was not very effective in, you know, stepping in, doing anything about it. So I went through my life either on a level keel, which is pretty nice most of the time, but, you know, with these terrific highs and real sinking lows.
Yeah.
And that whole thing about, you know, creating your own atmosphere and closing yourself in, I can do that because I'm a widow for 25 years. And my children pretty much on their own. My son lives far away. My daughter's got 3 children working, 2 jobs. So, yeah, that's, I see myself there, you know? And sometimes it lasts a couple of weeks. Sometimes it lasts, this last one lasted 6 months. I absolutely did exactly what you described. Ran out at night to get my food. Wouldn't even bring my garbage down. I might see a neighbor.
Hmm.
It hurts, you know?
I hear, Joyce, I hear.
Yeah, but
now, let me ask you, where are you?
I have a faith, and I know that my Savior lives, and that's what gets me through, you know. When I really turn him away by just not listening, that's, of course, when I'm going to sink into the worst depression. The trick is to stay in touch with the God that you believe in and trust him that he's there for you at every moment. every hour, at every difficulty, in every joy, in every accomplishment. It's
so what happens during all those? What happens during all those times?
With my faith?
All that times when he's not there in your mind.
I'm just functioning. My body's functioning. I'm doing what I need to do to stay alive, and that's it.
Now, ask me something, if you would, Joyce. Tell me about your father again. Your father was... You had two stepfathers, right?
I had two foster parents, different foster parents. My mother, I was illegitimate, and she didn't want to give me up, but when she realized what had happened in these foster homes, she did give me up. And I was adopted into what seemed like a very stable family, you know, young couple.
Mm-hmm.
But Dad, I suppose he feared my mom. Somewhat, you know, didn't show, you know, but...
But you believed in your father, didn't you?
I loved my father dearly, and I knew what he was coping, what he had to live with, you know?
Okay, so now stop for a moment.
Yeah.
As long as you maintained your love of your father...
Yes.
You were able to stay okay.
That's right.
Same as long as you're able to maintain your love of Jesus...
Yes.
You're able to stay okay.
Amen.
How do you separate the two?
How do you separate?
How do you know which is which that you're loving?
Yeah.
Okay, now stop for a moment. Stay with me.
I'm going to think about that for a second.
Stay with me, yeah.
Yeah.
Because what happens is you're saying the following. You're saying, I'm an animal who is lost in this world, and I need to believe somewhere that there's some protector out there.
Yes.
And I don't care what the protector is. As long as I can feel the protector, I'm safe. If not... I can't go out. I can't do anything. I have to stay right where I am.
Yep.
Until I could find that self-protection.
Yes.
Now, you mix this with the chemistry of a bipolarity.
Yes.
And we have this accentuated sense of danger that you walk around with.
Yeah, I'm not aware of it.
Yeah.
When I'm fine, I'm fine, you know?
Well, when you're fine, let's say when you're not going anywhere and you're isolated... Are you
well,
fine?
Well, that's not fine. Excuse
that's
me.
That's what I meant. That's
yeah.
not fine.
Right. No, I mean, when I'm functioning normally, you know, I mean, yeah. I am a busy person.
Yeah.
I'm not young, and I was working till now. I'm almost 76.
So the question becomes, Joyce, how do we get you to get this inner feeling of safety all the time? Because
well,
it's
I find
there.
That as soon as I take my eyes off my Lord.
Or your father.
I don't really think about my father.
I know.
No, I don't think about that, Dad. I learned that as I matured, that this is a very, very important aspect, and I give it the glory to the Lord and God, and we're all in the same situation in my perspective, that we all need a Savior. We're all sinners. We all stumble and we fall.
Great.
But when we deny that and we just pack it away somewhere, you know. We're never really growing as human beings.
Beautiful. Joyce, thank you very much. I think I'll play some special music for you today.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right, sure. Okay. So there I take a risk as I ask people to delineate what are they hoping for to be their savior. And almost every time when we're looking for a savior, it makes all the sense in the world. Who wouldn't want somebody to take care of them? Of course you do. Of course you want someone to take care of you. Who blames you? We're going to take a short break. When we come back from our break, we're going to play some special music for Joyce, for Jade, and for anybody else who's coming along, and then we'll take more of your calls at 212-957-2729. This is Armand DeMille with Julian Joiello. You could text us. No.
You can tweet us at... Armand DeMille Armand DeMille on Twitter.com if you want to send a question or quote or anything interesting our way.
Be back with you shortly.
Hey!
respect yourself. The Staple Singers. You know, how could you respect yourself if you don't know what a self is? Is the self the person who's reacting to the outside? Or is the self the person who's on the inside? It's such an interesting question. Who am I? Who am I, you know? What am I really like? Most people ask that question over and over again. You could look at a mirror and say, who is this person? Do you have any idea what you're like? Do you have any idea who you are? Do people define you? You can be motivated by one of three major instincts. Your first instinct in life could be like a Kabumi's. Hikimami?
Hikikomori.
You could be Hikikomori. You could say, all I care about is survival. All I want to do is get through. I'm going to spend the next 10 years of my life, right, just staying in my place, staying alone, fine.
Keep breathing, get my blood flowing, right.
Millions of people in New York City alone live in their isolated world, fine. They built their little cave. You got a cave. You have one out of a building. You know, if a building has like 20 stories in it and it's got 10 apartments on a floor, you got one of 200 people in a little building. And you have 200 of these folks, and they're all living separately, and it's fine. And they wave at each other in the hallway. They go down the elevator together. They pass each other. They smile, but that's the end of it. They get inside. They shut the doors. They shut the windows. Turn on the TV. Turn on the computer. That's it. Can't do that in India. Right? It comes right through the walls, right through the doors, comes through everywhere. Air conditioning does not work to keep out the world. But you could do it in Japan. Even more, you can make that room even tighter and smaller. It could be just a bedroom. 212-957-2729. We have Belove on the phone. Hi there, this is Armand DeMille.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Listen, this is a very interesting subject, and I think that I've gone through it and I'm still going through it. There was a time when I was younger that I just felt like, and I was just really lonely and looking for happiness, looking for someone to care about.
Belove, can you
and
turn down
me?
Your radio completely for me?
Okay.
Turn it off completely, okay?
Okay. So I had to go, I had to take myself painstakingly through the whole process of being alone. And I've come to find out, I'm 63 going on 64, that it is a process that I think all human beings have to go through of trying to figure out what being alone is about. If you're going to be alone and be sad and crying, then that's not a good state to be in. You've got to learn how to juggle in life and find out what's good for you. And I found that out because I do spend a lot of time being alone, but I'm not sad, I'm not lonely, anything.
But now wait,
enjoy
let's make this
being
right, Belove.
Me.
Belove, let's get this right, but you also went through 10 years of menopause. And in a thing that takes place, your chemistry changes. When your chemistry changes, your yearning to connect with another human being also changes. So you're being helped by a whole bunch of stuff that's saying to you, okay, kitty, it's your time to be with you. It isn't that
right,
you could take this lesson at age 23 and apply it. Because it doesn't apply.
No, it's a process going all the way
through.
That's
right. And luckily, your body gives you a hand along the way.
Right, because what I've learned is I interact with a lot of people. I take up dancing. I've taken up dancing lessons. These are the things that I like. So I'm intermingling with lots of people.
What is it that you don't want to have with somebody on an intimate level? What is the level of intimacy you want to avoid?
Intimacy. I don't really want to have that any longer.
You don't want to have
that. That's not a part of. Well, when you say intimacy, generically, or do I want to go even deeper and have a relationship with one individual on a sexual level?
I'll start with that. I'll start with, let's say, on a sexual level. Have you said, I've had enough with sex and romance and sex. Because that gets a little too weird for me. I'd rather not have that.
Well, it's not weird. It's just something that you can overcome.
I'm not saying just, me. You're saying you.
You get past it.
You mean you get past it?
I get past it.
You
it's
got
more
past
life
it.
Than just that.
Yeah, but I mean, you're not telling Julian he should be past it, right?
Julian, who's Julian?
I'm Julian. Hello,
Julian. My. You're not. You're saying you. You say you get past it. You mean I got past it. I learned that as long as I don't challenge myself on that level, I feel better. Right? Not that
no,
it is a superior
that's not
way
what
to
I'm saying.
Okay, what are you
it's
saying?
It's a choice that I've made. You know, I'm not saying that I can be better or I can't be better if I have or if I not have. It's a choice. And whichever you choose doesn't determine if you're going to be better or not.
Well, you're back to the you. You understand?
It doesn't say that I'm going to be better or I'm not going to be better.
Okay, so what would you think of a person as lovely, intuitive, intelligent as you are having a fully intimate relationship with another human being round the clock?
What does that say?
What does it mean to you, with the idea?
Well, there comes a compromise when there's another individual.
You're darn right.
Because you have to be considerate of another individual.
Isn't that a lousy thing? I mean, you know,
well,
have to be considerate.
That, again, it comes, you know, with a choice.
Yeah.
And I'm not willing to be that, to give up that much of my time.
Good for you. All right, so now that's a determination. That's a determination. This is not a superior way to be. It is a way to be. And it's your choice. And you made that choice because you don't want to give up that consideration of another human. What is the biggest pain of consideration for other humans? What do they need that you can't, that you don't like providing?
It's time. It's all about time.
Time is precious.
Time is precious.
Yeah.
And I just found out that the time that I want to give to another individual might not be enough time for them in order for them to reach the point of whatever it is that they need in life. But it's taking too much time from me, and I found out that I'm not willing to give up that time, so I have to pray.
You've been like a mother to men.
No, I don't think so.
Well, how do you take care of people? They occupy so much of your time. What do you give them?
I give them whatever it is that they need, and I'm speaking specifically about a younger person that is in a dilemma in their life, and I'm thinking that with my life experience that I could reach this person. But
that's what I said when I said you become a mother to them.
Yeah, it's painstaking.
Sure.
And I'm saying, Lord, this is doing your job requires a lot of patience, and I don't think that I have those patience that I thought that I had because I'm not getting through to this individual. So that's what I'm dealing
All
with
right.
now.
So what kind of music do you dance?
Hip hop. I love hip hop.
You love hip hop.
I love hip hop dance.
And
yeah.
of your favorite,
I like the moves. You know.
Which of the hip hop dance pieces do you think is one of the finest made?
Well, I don't know them in terms of giving it a name, but if I could describe one particular person that dances out there on the scene, the young guy. I can't even think of his name, but I think he has cool moves because it's all about the body language, you know, and what you're saying in it.
And do you dance often?
Every weekend I go for classes.
Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for teaching us. Thank you for bringing us in. Thank you for showing us how you take care of yourself. Thank you for not wanting to take care of people anymore. It's about time somebody just said, leave her alone. She'll take care of herself.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
To me.
Sure. 212-957-2729. It's an interesting time of year because at this time of year we have a thing called seasonal affective disorder. Seasonal affective disorder is a thing that happens as the light gets shorter. People tend to get more and more depressed. As they get depressed, they get sluggish on the inside, and really sluggish, and they get weary. And they look for something to spark them, but they eventually just give up. And little by little, instead of waking up in the morning and opening the blinds, they leave the blinds closed. And they say, well, I think I'll just sleep an extra hour, an extra day. Just take it a little longer. If you have that, one of the ways out of it is to keep the lights on as bright as you can, as often as you can. You can reverse this. And believe it or not, the answer is light. Light itself is one of the treatments they use. So very often you could find yourself sliding into it, but, you know, you could also figure spring is coming, and when spring comes, you will be fine. You know, the light will come back, the air will come back, and we'll be fine. We have another call on the line. Let's take Michael. Hi, Michael. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good.
First time call, a long time listener.
Oh, great, Michael. Thanks.
I just tuned in for what the last caller was talking about. Was she? I didn't get the whole thing, but was she basically talking about how much time you give to people and how much time people require?
Yes.
You know what? I think I'm in her school of thinking. I think far too many people require too much time, and I think most of it comes from needing your approval. They either need approval from you or they need approval from the larger society, and I think that's why most people either require attention from people. I think it mainly has to do with approval.
Or, well, do you live alone, Michael?
I basically have a roommate, but I spend most of my time alone.
Okay. Now, the person who you most likely, the last relationship you had who required you to reassure them, who was that?
That would be everybody you know, basically.
Everybody I know.
Everybody I know
requires your approval?
I think, well, not everybody you know, but everybody that I know, I would say. I think it's so universally understood that I would say that everybody you would know or everybody that
no,
I would
well,
know.
No, not everybody I know. Let me ask you something. Did your mother need your approval?
I think mothers...
Your mother.
I think they need your approval on certain levels. They do.
Your mama needed you to reassure her of what?
That she was a good mother.
Okay, now let me ask you about that. Stay with it a second, okay, Michael? Because you're a brave man, because you're calling in, because you made it on the show, and you're my hero, all right? Your mom said to you, dear son Michael, make me feel good.
Yes, she did.
Okay, how did she want you to make her feel good? She wanted you to reassure her that she was a good mother.
That she had been a good mother, yeah.
Right, and the truth of it is she wasn't all that great. She was okay.
Well, yeah, she had her moments.
That's right.
That's my point. You shouldn't have to require that information from someone when you know the real truth within your heart.
That's right. So you're tired of that. You don't want to be in another situation like that. Don't give me somebody else who's going to need my assurance. I'm tired of reassuring my mother that she was a great mother when she wasn't such a great mother. You know, she was okay. I'll stop blaming her.
The thing is, I can feel that way, but know that the person needs that reassurance and give it to them. I don't deny the person that reassurance. I feel in some way obligated to give them that reassurance.
Well, that's the problem.
That's the uncomfortable part.
The problem is you give them the reassurance, but you don't give them you. You see? You become a reassurance machine. So, oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah, you're really great. That's really wonderful. But then you move yourself. So you're saying somewhere in life, Michael, you're going to meet somebody who doesn't need that, who feels
correct,
secure enough.
Correct.
And that's going to be your partner.
You know, I'll give you an example. There was a girl I dated one time, and when we would be walking together, just quietly, because I'm a quiet kind of guy, she would always say instinctively, what are you thinking? Why are you so quiet? Mm. It made her nervous that I was just quiet and in an alone space. I think when you're around your ideal person, that you should be able to be quiet and not be questioned about it, as though you're thinking something that she doesn't want you to think. Does that make any sense to you?
Of course it does. Of course, people get worried if they're nervous like that. But you want the person who feels secure enough in her own skin. that she doesn't have to worry about this.
Correct. That she doesn't have to be reassured. Exactly.
You know,
that I'm
Michael.
Thinking about her, that I love her, or that I'm not going to leave her. She doesn't have to be
all of
reassured
those things.
About me of all those things.
You'll get it. How old are you now?
I'm 48 now.
Yeah, you got time. You got another year. Michael, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure. 212-957-2729. Well, that makes an awful good point. You know, you can become so dependent on reassuring people, and it's, am I okay? Am I okay? Am I okay?
Yeah, he's talking about that, and I feel like I did that a lot with a lot of my friends. I had this group of friends that I was just constantly spending my time giving them advice, and I didn't know why, but it was just doing it because I felt like I should.
Well, you're the kind of guy, you know, Julian, you're the kind of man. Getting your approval is special because you judge and you love and you offer people a good heart. And so people see that and they say, hey, I want to feel a little better about myself. Let me talk to Julian. You know, if they're going to meet somebody who's harsh, they're not going to do it. They're not going to take you so quickly.
Well, thank you.
Let's take another call. We have Jean on the line.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Jean. It's Armand.
Hey, Armand. So I'm thinking about my son. He's 15. He's in high school. And we were talking about the iCloud before and isolating oneself.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about him because he has isolated himself from his friends, and he is playing a game on his computer. And at the same time as that, he's Skyping on the phone with some friends he made down in Florida. We're in Connecticut. And I don't know. He seems happy. And, you know, I want to say, is this a real friendship? I mean, they talk, and he's always within my earshot, so I know what's going on. But what do you think of a kid? He does play sports, but who has taken himself from his friends and has just put himself in this world.
How old is he?
He's 15.
15, and does he have any girlfriends yet?
No. Mm-hmm. He's a late bloomer.
What does that mean?
Well, he's not interested in girls yet. Well, he may be, but I just don't know about it.
I would be concerned when a mother calls her child a late bloomer. I get concerned.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I get concerned.
That's a term I'm used to because I was always called a late bloomer.
I understand. I would be concerned with that social aspect. And I would want to have... Do you have a man around?
Oh, yeah, my husband.
And how does your...
He's Italian.
How does your husband get along with your son?
Well, that's a really good question because they get along great. They go to Yankees games. They go to UConn basketball games. They spend nice time together, but he's at work a lot. So on a daily basis, he's not that present.
No, but you have a good enough foundation there, and I love the idea that he's got both of you there. The thing that I'm concerned about now is, does your husband look at your son's sociability and wonder?
Well, my husband's a bit of a loner himself.
Okay. So now we have a very interesting picture. We have your son becoming like your husband.
Yeah.
And you on the outside. And this may be something worthy of examination. Maybe something looking to talk about it.
Uh-huh.
Now, of course, your son doesn't feel at all concerned, right?
I think he has his little worry brain going.
Hmm. You know, in a month, we're going to be doing a special here at WBAI where we're offering a time to get a chance to meet with me. And it's at a very, very, very reduced fee. And it's a thing we give the money to the station. It might be an interesting thing for you and your son or...
You know what? My daughter goes to a CBT, cognitive behavioral therapist, and he is not interested. Nobody's going to look at him. He would not. I don't think... I mean, I am speaking for him, but... I've over the years, I've heard you having those sessions for your listeners. I think it's great.
But
realistically, I don't think I'd get him in there.
Okay, well then how about you?
Ooh, that would be fun.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
Gene, I would love to meet you.
And where are you, in the city?
I'm in the city. Where are you in Connecticut?
I'm not going to disclose that, but quite close.
Okay, don't disclose it. Oh, Gene, you tell me so much by that phrase. Listen, I'll tell you why Gene is my favorite name if you ever get to meet me.
Why is that?
I'll tell you.
Oh, I have to wait.
Yeah, but you're not going to find me because I'm somewhere in New York, but I'm not saying where. Okay, Gene, it's lovely to talk to you. It's this Armand DeMille. Be sure to see if you can get in to see me. I'd like to talk to you about your son.
I have a suspicion
that there's more here than meets the ear.
Okay.
Okay? Nice to talk to you.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Armand.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.
We're going to have to leave you now, my friends. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with Ben and Julian, and we will be... you can send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com, or text us, I'm sorry, we're out of time for, and there goes the phone again. Can't do it, Julian?
Nope.
Okay, this is it. So we'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Best to all of you. 9 p.m.